Well, hi, everybody. It's 5+, and I suppose we ought to move forward because we need to learn how to learn. And so appreciate you coming. At the end of the day, it's been a long weekend so far. We've got a lot more to do, and I'm sure everybody that's here is interested in the idea of how we learn and why. And I know the name of this is not quite what you saw in the brochure, but it's basically the same thing. And what we've done is we move forward from the facilitation of learning into how we learn. What my company's done over the years, and I'm consistently fascinated at a problem we have, is that companies want to be able to talk internally and to other companies and to other peoples. And what we found out is that there are substantial problems with various kinds of personalities, various kinds of don't hand that out, please, now. But the reason has eluded us. We couldn't figure out why it was, for instance, that it's difficult for engineers to talk to people who are in the marketing department, or why salespeople find it difficult to talk to the creative people. Why in the world is that they judge each other, that they're difficult, that it's hard to get along? And maybe you don't know about this, but in the 20s, in the mid-20s, Harvard put together a concept of how to model behavior in personalities. Different personalities have different behavior. This is nothing about morality. This has nothing to do with immorality, morality, intelligence, nothing. It's how people deal with life. And it has evolved. And this thing that Harvard put together evolved into a very complicated set of charts called the Myers-Briggs test. And what ultimately happened was it began to be simplified again. And in the 70s, we established a process with a corporation in St. Louis called the Psychological Sales Associates so that we could figure out how to describe to managers and salespeople and workers in a company to communicate with each other. Well, this has now evolved to this level. And we didn't do this. This comes from some elder. Well, I'll show you where it comes from. But what has essentially happened is we've learned that if someone enters into an experience in learning and they have negative expectations, that means they're ready to not learn. There's a reason why they don't want to learn. Whatever their reason, they have a negative feeling. They're going to be ready to give it only about half their attention. And what that does to the learner, to the teacher, and most of all the information being taught is that it's almost an irreparable injustice. An awful lot of work gets done for nothing. And so, this is today a new type of information. I'm just becoming comfortable with it myself. And we're going to give you a little worksheet that you can hold because it's just on the edge of what? You kind of have to, what did he say? So we're going to run through it because there's a lot of it. We could go all day. As a matter of fact, the seminar actually is an all-day seminar, but not what we're going to do right now. And so it's a new kind of information about the methods to encourage learning in every type of personality. You say, well, everybody's pretty much like me, right? You think I'm like you? All right, well, there you go. You know right away I'm not like you. I mean, you know that guy's weird. So let's consider that we probably would be within our capability, within our rights, to consider there's a new wind here. It's blowing through the facilitation of learning. Now, it's a science. Learning is a science, and it's an art. It's an actual business. It starts right at the studies start right at the level of about 6 months, 4 to 6 months in children, all the way through life, how people learn, why they accept, why they reject information. I don't know if you've ever thought of it this way, but what human beings are probably doing is gathering information. That's probably all they're really doing. They gather information, they sort it, they decide based on information. So it's both a science and an art, and it's really very helpful to see things from both sides of a learning experience. And there are unique learners, and then there are unique teachers, and we're going to help you see who you are and where you fit so that you can work with teachers and students. And actually, teachers are responsible for, ultimately, the training in the kingdom. God, what? He brings in the class only after he trains the teachers. This is how to make learning captivating and informative and fun. And by understanding how to utilize this new information and how different people learn, not why or whether, but how they learn, we can develop talent. We can have different priority models to work from. This comes from the NetSpeed learning research. You can actually look into NetSpeed And it has nothing to do with us. We're not associated with them in any way. I'm going to break a little protocol here and just show you a product of the American that you're going to see behind the curtain here. So pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. But I just wanted to play this for you, and they were nice enough to allow me to play this. This is a product of American education.
All right, Melissa, I'm going to show you a picture. Who is this? If you can't pronounce his name, I will accept this title.
I've never even seen him.
You've never seen him?
No.
Haley, who is that?
He looks like Tom Hanks from Castaway.
Tom Hanks from Castaway.
Yeah.
No, that is not Tom Hanks and Catherine, Mike, okay. And Jared.
Steven Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg. No. Melissa?
I'm trying to think of names I can't pronounce.
Okay. Give me a name you can't pronounce.
Well, if I couldn't pronounce it, then I couldn't tell you.
Well, that is the president of Iran. Who is this? They consider her the most powerful woman in America.
Are you sure about that?
Well,
she's not Oprah Winfrey, so...
Not Oprah Winfrey. Not Oprah Winfrey.
She's not Clinton. She's not Condoleezza.
Not Condoleezza, right. All right. Mike and Jared?
The woman right under George Bush.
Not quite. Her first name is Nancy.
Pelosi?
Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi. That is correct. Mike and Jared, who is this? Mike and Jared putting their heads together on
Do
this.
Do we have a hint?
Do we have a hint? I'll show you his picture. Here's a picture of the guy.
It ain't Donald Trump.
It ain't Donald Trump. All right, let's go to Melissa. Melissa, who is that?
I have no idea, but he's kind of creeping me out.
He's creeping you out?
Yeah.
Now what's creeping
his
you out?
His eyes. It's like death stare he's got going on.
Death stare. What do you think
death.
He does?
Something bad.
Haley?
That would be Al Gore.
Al Gore, former Vice President of the United States.
You were right.
Of America.
All right. A product of the American educational system. This morning and last night, I counted three times. I asked the people who should know which way was west. Not here. Well, how about if I turn left or right? Which way would I turn? Toward Minnesota, toward Illinois. Want to go to Minnesota? No, just toward. Which way? So, and I'm learning that what's happening is people are turned off about education. So let's talk about that a second, because essentially working at it is what we're supposed to do. It's a science and it's an art, and it's very helpful to see things from both sides. And as well, it's our job as teachers, and it's our job as students, to make it worthwhile. Now, here's a learning challenge for you. Since we don't always approach each other's place in life with appreciation, since we don't always appreciate each other's strengths as strengths, I'll show you what I mean, let's start with some examples of a group of us who may not always appreciate or be appreciated by others for their place in life. We can all agree this is a group of people that are deeply misunderstood, and vice versa. What do I mean by that? They might think that's cute right now, but when they get to be dry-aged beef, they'll regret it, Maggie. You see what they're doing? In tattoos. You didn't think I was talking about human youth, did you? All right, how about this one? Before you download any more music, make sure there isn't a little box next to the song that says explicit. I'll remember. Two different thought patterns, right? One that understands technology, the other that's basically is surprised by it and has to be scraped off the ceiling. Now, I read about it. I didn't witness George Washington cutting the cherry trees. And, you know, that kind of question comes up. You know, how far back do you go? Do you remember dinosaurs? Things like that come up. So there is a process whereby it would be better for us to work together. Now, this at first may seem slightly amusing, but think about it for a second. At Ed? Jeremy, can I talk to Mom? You mean right now? No. I'll just hold until she happens to walk by so you don't pick it up to look for it. Or, remember, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. This reaction, maybe I should try keeping a list. Now, immediately, if you had seen the model we're about to look at, you'd understand you're dealing with two totally different learning types right here. I'll show you what we mean. We've got to take a look at this. Here's how awareness in this area works. It's going to give us the ability to work effectively with communication styles, and we need to be aware of them. And we need to begin with our own. With our own communications. So, we want you to peg your style. Could you hand those out now? We're going to give you a little, it's not necessarily a worksheet, but something to hold on to. Because you're going to get a chance to see a model. And here's the instruction. From each of the word pairs, I'm going to show you what they are. Pick the word that describes you. Out of the word pair, pick the word that describes you better. Here are the words. Facts or ideas? Which one describes you better? Are you a facts person or an idea person? Present or future? Are you interested in the present or the future? Now, we were asking people these questions in other ways. As far back as the 70s, when I was called in for Bell and Howell and DeVry Institutes, in counseling people, what do you want to do with your life? Where are you going to go with your life? And what ultimately happens is, in a very short time, you begin to realize you actually can peg your own style. Do you like concrete information? Are you interested in abstract, creative information? How about the big picture or detail? See, these are not opposites necessarily, but pick the idea, the word, out of the two pairs that match you. And your sheet is going to show you some more information about that. It's going to help you be able to do that. Okay? We're going to move forward because you have that in front of you. I want you to find the one, logical and practical, which is the achiever, or practical and personal, which is the anchor, or creative and personal, which is the adventurer, or creative and logical, which is the analyzer. And here's how you define those. Look at where the words fall. Where do you have more words in which of those four types for yourself? See, if you can see yourself in here, you can understand what type of person you communicate with well, easily, and which you do not. It's important. Because have you ever wondered why it is that sometimes you just can't get an idea across to someone? That teacher sure doesn't like me. I sure don't like that teacher. Now, why would that be? Person's in school to learn. Teacher's in school to teach. Why would people not like each other? This is why. People process and gather information differently from each other. Maybe you notice that the first two have a lot of practical qualities. Lots of practical. And the second two have more of a creative approach. Now, it's just a model. It doesn't mean this is how it is. No psychological model can actually guarantee that you understand yourself well or that it predicts everything you're going to do in every opportunity, in every situation. But basically what it comes down to is the communication styles that are on that sheet that's on that other side of the page. And here's why that's important, because it's a model that shows, and this is the model. It's a model that shows achiever, anchor, of course, adventurer, and analyzer. In between them, you'll notice that an achiever has some of the qualities of an anchor, but none of the qualities, really, of an adventurer. An analyzer has some of the qualities of an adventurer, but basically none of the qualities of an anchor. See? So if a teacher is an analyzer working with a student who is an anchor, they're going to have a hard time communicating. This happens in business. It happens in just interactions in even families. I don't understand that kid. Just can't talk to him. Yeah, that's why. Because we're processing information differently. There are different things that are important. I don't understand why he doesn't want to work at what I want him to work at. Well, there's a reason. Process information differently. And that's what we do as humans. We process, gather decisions based on information. For instance, in an achiever's case, up here, you'll notice that if they are more like an anchor, an achiever is going to have a practical approach. See the practical at the top? They're going to be practical. Also, they're going to be logical. So practical and logical, that's an achiever. Anchors have a tendency to not just be practical, they also have more of a people approach as well. They're practical, but they're also personal. And venturers are also creative and personal, and analyzers are logical as well as creative. Now, the point being, if you ever look at a radar screen, you can tell where the alien spaceships are coming from when you look at a radar screen. Right, look. If they're way over here at that spot, they're very, very logical. The aliens are. But if they're way in here, I don't know what they are. In other words, it's possible to plot somebody's behavior based on where they are in here. So you can be a great deal more practical and logical, and still be an achiever or you can be a great deal more personally oriented or personality oriented and practical oriented, and you can be an anchor, even in the same quadrant. That's what this is about. Okay, so you're the one who has to peg yourself. And interestingly enough, in doing that about yourself, you start to see it in others. That's why we wanted to hand that to you, because in fact, when you see it yourself and hold on to it, you'll start being able to see it in others. And by the way, it doesn't have anything to do with morality. It doesn't have anything to do with conversion. It has nothing to do with an intelligence level or rebellious or anything. None of that. It has to do with the way people process information. And there is a school of thought that says this is essentially, really, hardwired. But I think that what happens is we begin to not be hardwired so much to others as we learn to be tolerant. And that's what we're trying to do today. We're trying to learn adaptability. So, what this comes down to is what typically is you. Of course, all the adjectives that you've been looking at and described at one time or another, they all do. But the ones you chose as the most important ones to you are typically just that. They're you. You're the one who chose that. And they represent your dominant communication style, which is also your dominant learning style. I've gone through this, and I know which one I am, and I haven't told anybody yet. And let's see. But just for fun, how would you characterize, and we'll do it later, how would you characterize the styles of Bill Gates, Oprah Winfrey, Colin Powell, and Jimmy Carter? And if some of us in this room don't know who Colin Powell is or Jimmy Carter, we know who Bill Gates is, I'm sure, the second richest man in the world in the news today, and Oprah Winfrey. We know who she is. Anyway, Colin Powell is a general. He was also, was it Secretary of State? Secretary of State. And Jimmy Carter was President of the United States. All right. So, we're going to talk about adaptability, because once you recognize the style differences that we have, adapting to them is going to lead to a most productive communication conversations. That's really important. We can be very productive. You are a unique bundle. All human beings are a unique bundle of personal traits and characteristics. Nobody's right, nobody's wrong in the way they process information. It is just how they do it. So, we have individual preferences and perspectives, and they're expressed in our style. They're expressed. We do that. And style matters, because when we're understanding of others, we're able to collaborate and learn and teach more easily. We'll show you how. Don't forget, we're going to roll through this. So if you want to take notes on the piece of paper that we handed you, it's probably a good place to do it. First of all, out of the four, let's talk about the achiever. Oh, it's not up there anymore. Okay, where's that thing? Okay, here we go. The achiever is in the top right, the left-hand corner. The achiever, who is both logical and practical. Here is how an achiever defines success. Success is defined by an achiever as a solid result accomplished quickly. If you think that's success, you may be an achiever. You also could be a redneck. No. All right, so now, here's how we define them. If they have a motto, it would be, just do it already. Right? They're motivated by challenge. You can't do it, but you can't, but you can't. And they focus in the present. Deal with right now. They expect everybody else to as well. They're drawn to problems that can be solved right now. And they're concrete thinkers. The world of ideas and fantasies and dreams has very little appeal to an achiever. These are also the people who adopt technology early on. This is the person who has the new iPhone, the new Droid, the new Alienware computer. Okay? Their approach. They are logical. They are Vulcan. They think problems through objectively. It's interesting. They're objective about the way they think of problems. They evaluate options, take action. If an achiever has a blind spot, it might be to take action too quickly. That's important because they think they're right. Without considering the impact of their action or ideas on other people, they can take action too quickly. So achievers focus on efficiency. If it's efficient, we get it done quickly, that's the most desired solution. It's one that can be executed quickly. That's what you need to do. Let's get this fixed. Now, quick, hurry up. For instance, here's an achiever putting up some curtains. I'm sorry for the inconvenience. Let me finish rehanging these drapes, and I'll be out of your way. The final moments of Benny Teeble. Why? Because the great drapes are red. And he's about to charge up, right? Where's he going to go when he gets those drapes? Well, we need to get the drapes up. Of course, we aren't realizing that Benny is going to charge them because they're red. But we solve the problem because we got the drapes up without worrying about the effect on others. We solve the problem, though, see? Okay. That's the idea. Now, achievers approach. They are comfortable moving forward without a complex analysis of the problem. Well, don't tell me about the facts. Let's just get it done. They're likely to be impatient with unnecessary questions. Don't ask me that. Don't ask me anything. We have to get going here. We can't. You're wasting time in the meeting. Right? Intent on driving a problem to solution, they might not always consider all the variables. And actually, they capitalize on the strengths of others only when trained, because it's normal for an achiever to think this way. Here's how they can capitalize on the strengths of others. An achiever should first consider consulting others before deciding or acting. So what do you think? That's a major step for an achiever. I had roommates, and I was in an engineering school. I had roommates at the University of Illinois who would never ask someone else's opinion and still don't. I know the answer. These are the people, I'm not making fun of them, okay? These are the people who will sit bolt upright 3 o'clock in the morning and say, I've got it, right? Don't ask what they've got, and they're not interested in your opinion about what they've got. They just got it. And that happened regularly in my room for some reason over the years. But second, they need to encourage others to ask questions and express alternatives. If you are an achiever as a teacher, you want to encourage people to ask questions and express alternatives. What do you mean you have another way of doing it? See, that would be the way they would normally do it. Encourage someone to ask questions, and maybe they have an idea. And by the way, the best way to do this is there's no bad ideas. Go ahead and feel free to say whatever you want, and as vaguely as you feel. Because achievers are really rankled by somebody with fuzzy thinking. They're, ooh. So they need to learn, okay, we'll hear you out now, right? Third, they need to check in with people to see how they're feeling about things. And this is foreign to an achiever. They don't understand why is it important for other people to feel well about it. I already made the decision, see? Now, achievers are logical, and they're practical, and here's how you deal with them. First, you present facts and concrete details to an achiever. A student is an achiever, and you can categorize them that way. That's how you do it. You present facts and concrete details like this. For example, what are the answers as I gave them to you in class and from your research? In other words, the liberal arts system. Here's your information. Feed it back. I give you a grade. Okay? That is an achiever-based approach. Here's the facts. Feed them back. I'm the teacher. Feed them back to me. Now, teachers aren't achievers necessarily, but that is the method that's used primarily in liberal arts. Okay, next. Let me get this thing to come. Okay, they are also important. It's important to focus them on the present because that's where they want to be focused. So here's how you do it. This is how it works, specifically what I want you to know and how to use it, and it relates to together just like this. Why is that helpful? To them, that's what I need to know. I'm not interested in what might happen 20 years from now, how it might affect humanity in general. I'm not interested, they'll say, in how it feels, other people feel, or how it affects. I'm not interested in it. I want to know how it works right now. Okay? If this sounds foreign, I bet you better think about whether you've ever met anybody like this. With achievers, you want to stress actions rather than theories. Here's how you might want to talk to them. Processes work this way. The repetition of this method may not be a bad idea, so here are the specific results we're looking for. If you can't deliver these specific results, that's not good. That's the way you talk to an achiever. Does this at all sound like a normal classroom interchange? Yes. That's the way most professors, for instance, in a college setting, will say, this is going to be on the test. You ever hear that phrase? Okay. That's an achiever statement. Now, you want to present your view with logic and solid analysis when you're teaching them. We need this from you because this method has proved to be the most useful and efficient before in these specific applications. An achiever won't argue. An achiever won't question. An achiever not interested in that. An achiever can say, oh, this is how it works? Fine. Now I understand because you told me. And now I know how to feed the information back. In addition, concentrate on objective data rather than feelings. For instance, the facts you need to grasp are these, and you'll be expected to solve these problems using these methods so as to achieve a repeatable result. I hope you get the general feeling that this is more about facts, it's more logical, it's more practical, and that's exactly what they want. Okay, this is something it's not foreign to us. Here is an achiever but we thought you'd say yes. There's a problem. We're hungry. We want cookies. And we thought you'd say yes. The effect on you is beside the point. And I have solved this problem. Okay? Her face. I look at it and well, I can't talk to him. I don't know why he's like that. And, of course, the little one down at the bottom is going, I don't know what kind of personality I have, but I want a cookie. Okay. Now, achievers are passionate about tackling challenges, excuse me, and overcoming obstacles. They really want to improve things. They want to do that. They're passionate about it. So every organization needs them. Everyone. We want achievers. It's not a bad thing to have. Okay. The next one is the anchor. Okay. Anchor is the top right-hand corner of your chart. Success is defined by an anchor. I hope we're not going through this too fast, because if we need to go back, we'll explain it. But, and if you need to ask questions, feel free. Absolutely. Okay. Right now, success is defined by an anchor is a collaborative result in which every team member or class member or organization member feels good about their contribution. See the difference? Everybody feel good about this? Okay, let's go. Oh, Zeke, you don't? Well, let's talk it out. That is an anchor. By the way, anchors also have a tendency to be in the background. They stay in the wings. They tend not to be out front running things very visibly. And they may be the core of an organization. And you don't know they're there unless somebody shows them to you. Here's how you define them. If they had a motto, it would be, take care of people. Notice it's not solve problems, overcome obstacles. Take care of people. That's the most important thing. The most important thing. And they're motivated by connection and by trust. That's how they, you know, if you can't connect with them, if you can't allow them to connect or trust others, they're not interested. They're not interested. And the relationships with people are what give them meaning and motivation. Now imagine an anchor talking to an achiever about a project they're both working on. See? The achiever is only interested in how to get it done right now and how specifically to do it. And the anchor is interested in how people feel about it and let's talk it over. So they can't communicate well. They need to be able to understand each other processes information differently. Also, their focus, anchors are on the personal, and they pay attention to the needs of the people around them. It's important for them to do that. For instance, Dagwood, you wanted to see me about a math problem? Yep. Thanks, Dag. Everyone knows you're whiz at the tough ones. Oh, I suppose I do have a knack for it, don't I? Everyone knows you're the man, Dag. What do you think my odds are of making double blackjack on a hand like this? Well, you have to go for it, absolutely. Here's the thing. Here's somebody who's an anchor, at least in this cartoon. He is that guy that everybody kind of talks about as the one to go to for organization, the one to go to for opinion, the one to organize everything quietly in the background. And that's an example. The kind of person you feel comfortable having a relationship with, even in a working environment. All right. Again, let's define them. At the same time, they are practical, and they think through all the steps required to arrive at a solution. You say, well, wait a minute, I thought they were personal. Well, yeah, but they think through everything. They're practical about it. And if they have a blind spot, it might be paying more attention to keeping everybody satisfied than accomplishing results. And by the way, this also has a negative. And that is, if there's any potential conflict, they avoid it. They avoid it. Rather than confront difficult issues. And in fact, if a student isn't performing, a teacher who is an anchor will cajole or joke with them. If a teacher isn't performing, a student will tend to be the class clown about a teacher who isn't doing good work, if they're an anchor. You wonder why it is that somebody is very, very friendly in an environment with a teacher that's not doing well and not friendly with other teachers. That's why. It's because sometimes a teacher needs this kind of interaction. The anchor thinks they need it. And they won't confront the problem. Okay. The strengths of others. Here's how they can learn from other people. An anchor needs to capitalize on other strengths by, first, taking a stand, being direct with the situation when it requires it. Of course that's the case. Now, obviously, they need to provide opportunities to brainstorm and have creative options. And third, they need to dig deeper to understand a problem. Don't just leave it on the surface about how people feel about it. And they need to not worry about the status quo so much. In other words, the thing about anchors is they have a tendency to leave things the way they were. Or let's solve this because it's a lot like the other solution we need. Or this set of questions is a lot like the other set of questions we have. There's very little innovation with an anchor unless the team is an innovative or the class is an innovative class. Right. Now, with anchors, you can present facts and feelings very concretely to talk to them. Here's how. What are the answers I gave you in class and from your research? That's just like an achiever. You talk to them the same way about facts and feelings. Also, when it comes to focusing on the present, the same thing. It's how it works, specifically what I want you to know and use, and it relates together just like this. So that's very similar to an achiever. But now, an anchor is different because the way an anchor works with actions. You have to stress actions rather than theories. You can't talk about the idea about the way something is going to work maybe or testing it. It has to be action. Okay? And the process worked this way, and repetition of this method may not be a bad thing. Here are the specific results we're looking for. All right. And then finally, you address feelings and values and understanding. How do you feel this will ultimately work out? Why is that important to somebody? They want input, and they want you to understand if their vision of how it's going to work out isn't right, they want you to tell them. If it is right, they want you to accept it. That's the way an anchor thinks. Also, you have to include subjective information, not objective. An appreciation for human issues. Now, this sounds at first, in the process of learning and teaching, like a almost whimsical idea, and yet, what does this mean for the larger human condition? It's just about the single most important question somebody can ask you. And that's a subjective question. It's an anchor question. What does this process, this idea, this test, whatever it is, mean for the larger human condition? Is this a bad idea? Why are we doing this? For instance, here's an anchor. He's talking to these two fellas. Hey, torn blue tie, ripped blue shirt, shredded khaki pants. Guess I didn't get the memos, fellas. Well, there's a minotaur about to jump on him. He's not interested in the problem. He's interested in the people and their problems. See? That's an anchor. He's seeing the real problems, but not the causes. He's not interested in dealing with the causes. He's interested in talking about and dealing with and the interpersonal relationships about the problems that he sees. Of course, they're going, right? All right. Anchors are passionate about making systems and processes work for people. That's how an anchor learns. How does the whole thing work for people? They can't learn any other way. Not won't, can't. And they also can't teach any other way. Not won't. Can't teach any other way. It's how they teach. Every organization needs anchors. And we should listen to them. Who do you suppose is a good example of an anchor in a group of people? Maybe this guy. I think my nose is frozen. If I knew how to hibernate, I'd do it. I worry about Snoopy. He still seems to get cold at night. There's your anchor. Right? I've tried just about everything I can think of to help him. I've given him blankets, I've given him straw, I've given him everything I can think of. I have an idea. Another anchor. Why couldn't he sleep inside the doghouse instead of on top? This is kind of a ridiculous question. Because nobody to hear that. Yet, it's the solution. Okay? So we need anchors because we've tried everything else, but they come up with a solution. It's all about taking care of people. All right. Now, adventurers, and I'm going to go through this quickly, success is defined by them as an innovative project developed through high energy and collaborative teamwork. High energy, collaborative teamwork means we're going to come up with a brand new way to do this. And if you teach me in class, I'm going to come up with a new way to answer your questions. And if I'm a teacher in class and I'm an adventurer, I'm going to teach you about this subject in a way you've never been taught before. That's an adventurer. Here's how you define them. They're described as creative and personal. Their motto would be, take a chance on something new. Don't hold back. They are motivated by excitement and brainstorming and building creative solutions with other people. And they are psyched up by imagining what's possible. They will develop an idea to the point where it's successful in their minds and they'll give everybody credit who was associated with the process. The classroom, the chem lab, the company, the church. Everybody, let's have a party celebrating our success. That's how adventurers work. And they want to engage. They love it, engaging and generating ideas brand new. They're focused on creative things and motivated by new, novel, and innovative things. And they are also personal, very interested in each other, in other people. How much room do I have to try something new? Let's work with everybody to figure out a new thing, because if it isn't new, it's worthless. Okay? It's got to be new. For instance, here's an adventurer. He's kind of unclear on the concept. Being interviewed by the State Department of Corrections. But enough about me. Enough about me. Let's talk about you guys. That's an adventure. Let's deal with the problems together, fellas. Okay. All right. Now, how do you work with the strengths of others if you're an adventurer? Well, first be willing to understand and study measurable data before proposing innovative solutions. Because what they'll do is they'll come up with solutions that don't necessarily work. And when they do, guess what happens? They'll say, well, there's a learning lesson for you. There's a life lesson, and they move on. Second, encourage replicating procedures that work. In other words, just because we did it before doesn't mean we shouldn't do it again. Adventurer, we could do it again. It wouldn't be a bad thing. And third, allow others to critique their ideas and recommend contingency plans. Because after all, if it's a brand new plan, maybe we ought to be able to critique that. Nah, it's a new plan. That's what counts. See? They need to learn to let others talk, too, and be part of the process. They need to focus on ideas and the future. Present your vision. This is how you talk to them. Tell me your vision of the outcome of this class. Why are we studying this class? Why are we studying math? Why are we studying geometry? Why are we studying history? Tell me about your vision of it. What's the use of it? Also, present the big picture to them. Explain why we're even studying this material at all, Mr. Adventurer. Tell me why we're studying French literature. What would be the reason for doing it? Now they have to figure it out why. And that's helpful. That motivates them. They are motivated where others aren't motivated that way. You know, it's not just factual. Encourage imaging, imagining, and thinking, what could be, what could be? Well, what might occur from developed wisdom like here, like we're working on now? And then also address feelings and values and understanding. And how do you feel about this and how it's ultimately going to work out is very motivational for an adventurer. Now, you take an achiever who's only interested in facts and you have them try to work with an adventurer and they're going to have all kinds of sparks flying. Unless they understand they both have strengths. That's the point. Also, you can include subjective information and human issues, appreciation for how it affects humanity. What does this mean for the larger human condition? That's important to deal with in an adventurer's classroom, in an adventurer's approach. For instance, here's an adventurer. Every morning, I eat a bowl of Snickersnacks. I don't blame it. They sure have some nice premiums, don't they? Oh, yes, only I don't regard that as premiums. I look upon them as personal gifts from my friends at the Snickersnack place. Because everybody's his friend. Okay? That's an adventurer. And his problem has been solved because he gets a present every day. Now, they're passionate, these people, about engaging people and creating innovative solutions. That is the reason to work, learn, and teach. Every organization needs it and should appreciate them. Should appreciate them. Just because they think big. The bug, the trap of herd elephants, come to Papa. That's an adventure, all right? We need somebody to do this. We need people like that. Might not work every time, but it's not a bad thing. Now, in an analyzer, they're defined in success this way. A well-thought-out creative solution that'll work now and for the long term. That's what an analyzer is like. That's the lower left-hand corner of your chart. They are defined this way. Described as creative, logical. Interesting. Do creative and logical go together? Well, analyzers sure tell you they are. If they had a motto, it would be envision it and design it. They're motivated by a challenge of deeply understanding a problem and designing a creative solution. They want to understand this problem better, they think, than others. Very important to come up with a creative solution, though. And they often view a problem as a subtle, complex system. Many underlying areas, like you have to peel off the onion pieces by piece to find out what's really going on underneath it. And with a solid understanding, it's an important thing, with a solid understanding of the issues and options and consequences and implications, analyzers then are ready to design an elegant solution. That is not their definition. That is how they process information. So this isn't a bad idea. Analyzers just are very personal in the way they interact with people. Now, here's their approach. They're logical. They approach problems objectively. using reason and analysis, and they evaluate their options, and they're immersed in the problem analysis, and they may be unconcerned about or completely unaware about their impact on people. The, you know, who else is like that? The anchor. Isn't that funny? Because they're in many ways opposites. But that's something they have together. They tend to come up with solutions or answers or methods of teaching that almost always aren't aware or don't present an example of how it's going to affect people that they're working with. For instance, the team originally called themselves the Fantastic Five until the group decided that Tuba Tim's performance wasn't so fantastic. See, he's an analyzer, and he wants to be part of the team. Look at them, they have their hands over their ears. They're the Fantastic Five. It's the Fantastic Four now, you see. That's why. Because they had Tuba Tim, but now it's just the Fantastic Four. That's funny. All right, okay. Well, let's move on. Point being that analyzers think that the team is the most important thing, the class, the environment, and the people they know. But the problems don't necessarily get solved that way. So, how they approach. They value the input of others, especially if they think logically. So they're not interested in fuzzy thinkers. They could be impatient. You told me that. I don't understand why you keep repeating it. And how analyzers can take advantage of the strengths of others is very easy. It's very easy for them. Pay attention to the needs of others and recognize their contribution. Encourage others to share their ideas and opinions, even if they're presented illogically. It's okay. If it doesn't make sense to me, go ahead and say it. All right. That's the way they should react. And make decisions quickly when work demands require it. Because the thing of it is, an analyzer will wait until the solution is absolutely proved and everyone agrees that it's proved. Or the answer to a program is completely analyzed to the point of basically death, where it's finally done. They need to make movement. They need to move forward. You quit analyzing. There is a time where they need to be encouraged to do that. Now, if I can get this to come up here, here we go. You need to focus, when you're dealing with them, on ideas and the future. Ideas in the future. How do I talk to them? Well, like this. Present your vision of the outcome of this process. Oh, good. I wanted to talk about what it's going to do. All right. How about this? Present the big picture. Why are we even studying this material? Why are we working on this? Why? You tell me. Also, encourage imagining and imaging, what might occur when this fully has developed into a program, a lesson, an interaction. This wisdom we're working with, what might occur if we actually put this in place? Well, that's motivational to an analyzer. It's not motivational to an achiever. They're not interested in that. Okay? Or to an adventurer, really. All right? In addition, you want to present your view with logic and solid analysis. You know, your evaluation is based on test scores, based on your understanding, just like the liberal arts environment, right? And then, concentrate on objective data rather than feelings. Like, what? This is the answer. What is it based on the information I gave you? Here is the information that's going to be on the test. We need to find the solution based on this information. That's how they think. There's an operative word in this. Houston, we have a word problem. The operative word is we. Not, you know, Houston isn't anywhere near this problem. Even though it's just a word problem written on a rock, nonetheless, it's a problem they have. But Houston, we have a problem. That is an analyzer. We're in this together, Houston. Even though you're there safe and I'm not. That's an analyzer. The man who said that on Apollo, 13. Apollo 13 was an analyzer. Now, they're passionate about resolving complex problems with creative solutions. Not factual ones necessarily, but creative ones. And every organization needs these people. So, let's embrace and not ignore the mix. It's better to work together than apart. Don't do this. Don't pay somebody to ignore the problem. Give me $5, I'll ignore the problem for you. That's a bad idea. We can be most successful in our communication if we enjoy the mix and you have the satisfaction of being even more effective and fulfilled. Here's how to do this. Success in our communication. If we focus not only on, listen, this may be a value. If we focus not only on awareness of style differences and adapting to them, but also on accepting and appreciating styles, including our own, rather than judging a colleague as overly methodical, look to that person as a procedural expert. If it hasn't already occurred to you as we sit in this room, a group of people called by God, guided by God, created by God, and trained by God, how do you suppose he looks at you? Because you're different from the other people he created. Can he look at you as an expert in your way of gathering information? And should we learn from that? Instead of, well, let's figure out what's different about us and pick on it. How about looking at what's different about us and considering it the strength of the kingdom, of the family of God? Now, instead of seeing others as too focused on political correctness, appreciate his or her ability to keep us out of conflict. Instead of apologizing for your big picture focus, you're not effectual enough. Well, serve when it'll be valued. Only then, because the big picture focus is needed much of the time, you will be called on. We get this to come. This is something special. It helps to remember each person brings something special to the table. So enjoy the mix. You're going to have the satisfaction of being even more effective and fulfilled. And let's look at how, if you did that little piece where is that anyway? It's on the other side of the thing. On Oprah, you know. Here we go. The answer to this. Bill Gates is logical and creative. He's an analyzer. Oprah Winfrey is creative and personal. She's an adventurer. Colin Powell is logical and practical. He's an achiever. And Jimmy Carter, practical and personal. And he's an anchor. And they're all very strong, necessary parts of an entire society. None of them are entire unto themselves, but together you build a strong organizational structure. And you build a strong learning environment. Style matters, everybody. When we understand others, we're able to collaborate and learn and teach more easily. And we have individual preferences that are very important, put there by God. Maybe not hardwired, but certainly very deeply ingrained. And they're expressed in our style. And an understanding of basic communication that we did today, because this goes into very deep channels, it gives us a way to accept and appreciate and adapt to each other. So, how do we learn? One puzzle piece at a time. Individually. Together. Thanks.